This is 69 the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry for more than 11 years, first online and now as a podcast. We cover what's new and interesting, and we filter out all the BS. This podcast gives listeners a chance to hear at length from people and companies who are making a real mark in the industry, with new ideas or just old-fashioned hard work and smarts. You can listen to episodes online, get it from iTunes or Google Play, or use your favorite podcast app to pull down the RSS feed. I know a lot of our listeners fire up episodes while they're stuck in traffic or taking the dog for a walk. We also have a companion podcast called Projects. That one digs deep on the creative and tech behind landmark signage projects. That's done every second Friday by Michael Tutton, and you can find that at dsprojects.podbean.com. 69 is sponsored and supported by ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. I was introduced to Taiwan's Pilot TV and the company's product evangelist, David Mu, by some of the folks who invited me over to Beijing recently for a talk at Infocom China. Mu wanted to tell me about his company and thought it would make good podcast material. Now, I tried to dodge that because I'm about as excited by digital out-of-home ad networks and C-stores as I am about traffic jams and Jane Austen movies. So many ad networks like that have failed, so, you know, this was just going to be another one. But he's a persistent guy, and when we met at the trade show in Beijing, he rattled off what was going on, and he pretty quickly convinced me this was not another no-hoper, build-it-and-the-advertisers-will-come kind of screen network. These guys are heavily into analytics and proving to packaged goods and other brands that this is a medium that can work, and they already have 8,000 screens running in Taiwan and beyond.
All right, so David, we're sitting here in a very nice hotel hallway. Yes. Hopefully a bunch of people don't come walking by and yakking away or decide to sit down and have a conversation with us. But we're at Infocom China. You're from Taiwan, where we met yesterday, and you started telling me about your company, and we kind of agreed this was interesting, and we should know a little bit more for the podcast. So tell me what Pilot TV is all about, what your role is, and what you guys are doing.
First of all, it's our great pleasure. Pilot TV is a Taiwanese signage operator. We call ourselves a media operator.
And so digital out-of-home media company,
yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
I think you'll go on and explain there's more to it than that.
Yeah, well, we deploy in retail locations, primarily in convenience stores, and there's a reason for that. Hopefully we'll get into that. We establish a network, and then we monetize the media service, and we revenue share with the venue owners. Our company started around 2006. At that time, we're known for facial detection media monetization. Mm-hmm. At that time, there was no facial detection mechanism, and the paradigm at that time was, if you build it, the advertiser will come. And we were given an opportunity to deploy an entire convenience store, and we found that very difficult. You know,
yes.
out of need for survival, we began to think really like a TV station. We begin to operate on behalf of the venue, how to create content that's engaging, how to solicit advertisement, and then we begin to find ways to maximize the media value, and that's how we turn to facial recognition as a way to prove delivery. Mm-hmm. And over the years, we accumulated enough experience to confidently say that we have it figured out. So I'm here to share that with the rest of the world.
So I think I read you're out at around 5,000 locations.
Actually, right now it's closer to 8. So
okay. Is that all in Taiwan?
They're mainly in Taiwan, but we do have overseas proof of concept deployments starting now as of this year. So we are also in different countries as
Whereabouts?
Well. Whereabouts? They're in China, Philippines, U.S., mm-hmm. and we have some engagement in Japan. So basically, okay. pretty good markets.
So when you first told me about this, I thought, oh boy, here's another C-store network, and exactly what you said, the build it and they will come thing. And mm-hmm. they never did come for a whole bunch of companies.
Yes.
They put in screens on their own nickel, mm-hmm. tried to sell third-party advertising. Yeah. I wouldn't say all of them, but the vast majority of them died horrible deaths. Mm-hmm. That's how you guys started, and you realized this isn't working. We need to help the retailer sell their stuff?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the two things. First of all, we were founded by Qiling Technology in 2006, and at that time they were the world's third largest LCD manufacturer.
Yeah.
So we were supported by manufacturing, but even then we made mistakes like everybody else did. So what we do is trying to work through our mistakes, and that cross we carry for many years, the assets and so forth. And
so at that time, what did you put in the stores?
We put in 32-inch LCD screens, which cost today around $5,000 a set.
Ooh.
And we deploy over 2,000 locations in a major Taiwanese convenience chain. Mm-hmm. And again, build it. There's a lot of work that we have to solicit advertisement. And then, of course, the question is, are people watching it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the impetus to put us into this audience measurement path. Mm-hmm.
So what was the programming model like in version one versus what it's like now? What changed?
Well, initially, of course, we just trying to solicit advertisement, and we do look at it as a video poster box. But
so it could be advertising that had absolutely nothing to do with the store.
Well, the stores themselves are multi-SKU, so it allows multiple brands within mm-hmm. the stores, and also allows for out-of-store brands. You know, basically in those kind of retail locations, these are not unexpected for consumers. But again, we have to put in content, we have to create engagement, we have to train or work with the stores to have this thing, to have them become co-owners of the media.
This is current state or the old way?
That's the transition from the old way to the current state.
Okay, so what were you doing originally? It was just stuff you were putting up on the screens?
Mm-hmm.
Just whatever content and whatever ads you
yes.
sold.
Yes, yes.
And current state now is you're working in a partnership with the retailers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and today we do have a TV-like programming. So the pacing, the content, the paradigm is created so that we can fight for TV ad budgets in out-of-home media. And the experience that we have for today's media is more television-like.
So television-like means there's audio?
There's audio, and there's programming, there are news clips, there are information,
okay.
entertainment, and then advertisement.
But so this feels like a channel?
Yes, uh-huh, exactly, and we do call it a channel.
Okay, so. And does it, you're in 7-Eleven, mm-hmm. is there like a 7-Eleven channel, and is there
yes,
a different channel for
yeah,
a different company?
We call 7-Eleven the iChannel,
mm-hmm.
and then for Family Mart, it's the Family Channel, McDonald's, it's MyTV, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So we branded, we also branded separately, and for ad buyers, they know exactly what kind of audience profile is within this particular channel, and then we're able to sell that channel by its own characteristics.
Hmm. How is the audio working out? Because in most cases, digital signage operators are strongly encouraged not to use audio because the people in the store who work behind the counter mm-hmm. will go insane.
Well, that is an issue. Actually, we face that. The different venues have different strategies. One, convenience stores would insist that they want their own audio, so they would source outside radios for
in-store radio
background music.
Yeah.
Yes, but for another venue, they would unify the in-store audio so that it will become the single audio source that is tied to the to television.
Mm-hmm.
And because we're TV run like a program, so it's not as brainwashing.
It's not as repetitive.
Insane, yeah, to the store. And it also means that within the store, if you're not in front of the TV, you can still justifiably expose the advertisement, and the advertisers like that.
Mm-hmm.
You hear it in different aisles, you still hear the message about the product, and sometimes the audio actually turn people's head toward the screen.
Mm-hmm. And was this all done based on having spent a lot of time trying to sell into the media planning community and not really getting anywhere and starting to understand that they want to buy this like they buy TV, so we need to adopt and make this like TV for them?
Well, for in our case, actually, we start out as a media company. Our general manager, Mac Ma, is a senior media person, so he knows the media community and their language, and we have that advantage. So we tune our product towards them. The way I think we are able to become successful and survive is that we understand venue value, mm-hmm. so that we tune the media towards what's most valuable to the venues, but he also knows the media value. So when we do reporting, when we do the targeting and the ad placements, we know pretty well how they want it. And because mm-hmm. we understand both of them, that's how we are able to sustain this ecosystem.
Right. Okay. So this is an audio podcast, so we can't show what the stores look like. So maybe describe what 7-Eleven looks like in terms of what's in there and what a Family Mart looks like.
Okay, well, a typical Asian convenience store is a bit smaller than a U.S. size convenience store. And within the size of a room, you have certainly products in one side of the room, and then you have a checkout counter that is close to the entrance. Mm-hmm. And the screen is behind the checkout counter, is placed above the cigarette. So everybody who goes to convenience stores, their head would be naturally aligned, right. as they check out, naturally aligned to that spot. And basically that's the lowest friction place where we can put our signs. And the idea is that people are exposed to the signs twice. And once when they enter the store, and one more time when mm-hmm. they leave the store. So as they form a line, usually the one who is checking out is the one who is not going to pay attention because they're talking to the register. But the right. people who are behind them have nothing to do. So they'll be looking at the screen, and the speaker usually is placed above their head. So mm-hmm. the primary speaker integrated within the store is providing audio to right. To the TV.
And is it still a 32-inch display?
Right now they're 46-inch.
Oh, okay, so they're
yeah.
big.
Yeah,
and they're in landscape mode, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Landscape for the cigarette counter, and then there is a sign that is a portrait style that is placed at the entrance. So the idea is that they want to have that replace the entrance poster, and when people walk in, they'll be able to see that. So there are two screens.
So it's different content, though. It's not the same.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The vertical screens is more of a semi-static content. So it's like a motion posters, and is there to create this impression or engagement. Mm-hmm. But the TV-like content is at the checkout line.
Mm-hmm. And how long would the programming loop be?
We time our programming loop at 1 hour.
Oh,
actually, okay. But the hour, of course, there internally there are repeating contents. But the reason why we slot it in the hour is because when we sell advertisement, they can select spots. Yeah, mm-hmm. they can select which hours they want to do that. And then within each hour, we will actually have different frequencies between different spots, because right. each ad buyer, they're committed to certain amount of audience delivery. So mm-hmm. let's say you're an ad buyer, and we strike a contract for us to deliver 100,000 adult male for this particular shaving product. And then when we do play these ads, we would target locations where historically we see a lot of adult male show up. And then at those times, and then at certain time periods where the ad buyer has some choices for maybe during lunch hour, maybe during the transit hours. Mm-hmm. That's when the business people go to convenience stores. And then we'll have greater frequency of this advertisement play during those times. And then each time it's played, we will pick out adult males. So we won't see adult male and then play adult male ad. We would play them naturally as part of TV programming. Mm-hmm. But we will pick out
Those ones.
Yeah, we will pick out the one that fits the physiological profiles. Mm-hmm. And then we will have a progress, daily progress tracking. So let's say the 100,000 male, we expect a 4-week campaign. So we would okay. track the progress by 2 weeks or somewhere in between. We would see, is it over or under? If not, we would adjust frequency.
Right.
If it's over, then we over-deliver. It makes the ad buyer happy.
So this is a much more contemporary way of doing a C-store ad network than in the past, where it would just be you're buying markets and you're buying gross impressions without any kind of targeting, and it'd be like a 3-month campaign and that's it. This smells a lot more like online.
Yeah. Well, it's not as precise as online, and that's our that's to our advantage, because for FMCG product, you cannot be so pinpoint precise and not able to have a broadcast play. But what our targeting is within demographics, within locations, within time period. So there, we're targeting market segments, and we're able to convince the ad buyers that the way that we target, and then our reporting supports our targeting. Mm-hmm. And then that it makes the media value higher. And that really is what took us so many years to work towards.
It takes time and real money to make and host this podcast, so I'm grateful for the continuing support of ScreenFeed.
Hi, this is Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. I hope you're enjoying the podcast as much as I am. I've loved Dave's blog since we started in the industry. It's now our 10th year at ScreenFeed, and we've grown to be a reliable partner for the industry, serving over 1,700 customers with over 100,000 screens globally, and we're currently getting 10 million content requests daily. But more important than that is that we make content beautiful, functional for the medium, and we help our customers meet their goals of increasing viewership and satisfying customers. If you don't know how ScreenFeed can help you, it's worth 5 minutes to browse our website or give us a call. If you're out walking your dog, driving home, or relaxing on your favorite chair, just make a mental note to check us out. Now back to the podcast.
So let's talk about that technology. You're using anonymous video analytics, pattern detection to do this. Maybe provide some description on what all you're doing there, how it all works.
Okay, the demographic recognition, certainly it's different than individual recognition. So
Let's back up a little bit, because some people probably aren't even familiar with that. There's a camera at the screen, and it's using machine learning to look at faces and figure out male, female, and so on.
The learning is done already. I mean, we're not learning on the spot. It's actually by the time we install the cameras, it already knows how to pick out male and female,
different
demographics. Just that technology-wise, it's not the same as if you use your face to open a lock. You know, basically that's like pixel to pixel, or very, it's individual identification.
That's recognition. Facial patterns.
Yeah. Well, for facial pattern, generally, basically we use object recognition. We try to detect where the eyes and nose and mouth are. First we detect what, these images are, and does it contain a face in it?
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of CPU resources to do that. But once we do have a face, and then we will compare with, the population average of your facial geometry. We detect your face, we quantify your face, and then your facial numbers is compared to different categories. So let's say we have two genders and maybe 4 or 5 age categories. So there are 10 boxes. And your face, which one will it most likely fit this particular box in terms of facial average, and we have a confidence number, and then we can confidently say that, oh, you belong to adult male.
Sure.
And then that's how the facial recognition is done. Now, when we're picking out we're detecting your eyes and nose, basically we also know your facial geometry as well. So that allow us to use your facial geometry position to know whether you're paying attention to the screen or not. You have to be sufficiently frontal face to be recognized or to be identified as a viewer, and then then we start clocking you. We would start detecting that this adult male at certain time of day started looking at the screen, and then that's the entry point. And then when you're done looking at the screen, you look away. Then that's your exit point.
And if there's a 30-second spot, I would imagine there are adult males and adult females who look for 4 seconds, then they look away, then they look back, and so on. How do you track that?
Yeah, that's actually one of the requirements from our advertiser as well, is like, how do you prevent multiple billings? I mean, they don't want to multi-pay, and certainly we're not detecting them individually. So if you do cover your face and then you look up, you become a new person. The way we do it is, well, certainly you know, we don't want to give the whole shop away. But no. the way we do it is within the screen, we kind of have a tracking. You know, we maintain your facial recognition as long as you are within the screen, and as long as we recognize you as a face, we would try to put like a little radar on you to maintain this.
You kind of set a cookie for that face for.
Yeah. It's a very temporary placeholder for you. So I'd be looking at the screen, and then somebody's talking to me. I'd be distracted. I'd look away, and then the screen would start and stop. Mm-hmm. But then I am still the same person. Okay. Right. It still knows me. So I just not paying attention. Well, I look back, and then it would be the same person start looking back again. So that's within a reasonable screen presence, and behavior. We can say that, we know how many times you've been looking at the screen. Right. And then in the back end, we would filter out the additional views and so forth. Now, and, you know, just to be in detail, let's say you are within two different spots. You'll be looking at this first spot like twice. Mm-hmm. Then we don't bill you on the second view. But if your view extends to the third spot, and then you look at it long enough, we can bill you again, because that's a new view of a new spot to the different viewers. So again, all these things are done in the back end. As long as we can track in the front end, we can filter out in the back end.
And the media planners, what are they looking for in terms of reporting? Is it just the gross number of views that you delivered, this 100,000 views, or are there certain cues that they want to see?
Well, certainly they want to look for credibility. You know, if you look at the data, and if it's true, you know it's true. And our views collaborate with the in-store traffic. So again, we don't make it up. So again, the details of the reporting, the first thing they look for is the truthfulness of these reports. They also look for additional insights that they're going to see. Maybe they're targeting male, but are females looking at it? And at different locations, you know, how does it perform in by geography? So all these information.
So you can get it down to males like this particular spot, and they tend to like it more in urban areas as opposed to suburban areas?
Yes, actually, we do look at by second ratings, and we can segregate between different locations. We can actually group locations by their common behaviors. Mm-hmm. So if there's certain part of the ad that appeals to more sophisticated audience, and then they're at the certain locations, by grouping them, we can actually see the peak of that rating stronger. So so then we know that this thing is delivering to the right people. And then again, we can differentiate. The same mail at different locations may not react to the same cue. Then they will react differently. And we use that to prove that we deliver to the right people. And then also we use that to group locations to see that if behaviors are common in these locations, then we start asking why. And then we can start going, oh, okay, maybe there is a reason why these people react the same way is due to certain things. And once we know that, we can package it. We can tell the advertiser saying that we found the target segment, we have market segmentations, and then through behaviors, we can deliver. We find out where they are, then we can deliver to them. Mm-hmm.
Because you're paying so much attention to like the timelines of how people are looking at spots, have you started to identify things that work and don't in terms of creative and pacing and all that? That
yes.
We know this is not going to work for you. Don't do that. We've learned that this is going to work better.
Yeah, actually, this is what we do found out is that if you double the length of the content, you may not double the number of audience. And that's a kind of interesting, you know, there is a optimal length for different locations to get maximum views. But once you start increasing the length, you do not linearly increase the views. And the model we have is that when people look at the screen, certainly, you know, they're using their spare time to look at the screen. Mm-hmm. It's not their main thing. It's almost like shopping. You know, if you look at something in a department store, if you look at something through the window, you would look at it and say, oh, do I want it enough? And then you will think, does it cost too much for me to want to buy it? So when people gauge content, they would very quickly assess, is this a long piece? Do I want to sit through it? If not, then they just, you know, they just leave. But sometimes if a content is short enough, actually it does not necessarily have to be that creative or that engaging. People just think, oh, well, if I look at it, it would just turn to the next thing and I have nothing better to do. I just see what it does. Mm-hmm. And at certain locations where it's very busy, where people's attention and they're very anxious to leave, that kind mm-hmm. of thing, you really can't have very long spots. We literally have people watch through 5-second stills. You know, mm-hmm. you can change like still JPEGs. You know, you have 5-10 different JPEGs, and we see pretty extensive views across these JPEGs. People just go, oh, okay, that's interesting. Okay, what's next? So that's one of the surprising things.
So is there a sweet spot in terms of length?
It's very subjective. We deploy in McDonald's, so the behavior there is different. You know, people are very calm, and the content needs to be longer. Mm-hmm. Just subjectively, the content needs to be longer than they would be looking at it. For checkout lines, it needs to be shortened. I think the optimal length is somewhere between 15 to 30 seconds.
So that long?
Well, I mean, a lot of times the commercials are from TVs, you know, they're sharing the same film. So without much editing, we just put it in there.
And do you kind of have to do that if you want to get a buy that's going to go across different mediums? They're not going to create original creative just for the Family Mart network or the 7-Eleven network.
Well, there's cost concerns. So
sure.
Anything that will minimize cost in production mm-hmm. Increases the ability to have cross-media buy. So mm-hmm. that's one of the rationale. If it requires exclusive content production for a particular media, mm-hmm. that may or may not, you know, suit the advertisers that well. But we do have interesting specific campaigns. I mean, in the talks we talk about programmatic content and. In our playback, actually, we do use Adobe Flash, and there are campaigns where we're selling sunscreen.
You're using Flash?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's back then.
I thought that was dead.
Well, I mean, you know, it's backward compatible. We use it for years, so that was all the way back, I think, at least five years ago. Mm-hmm. But the campaign was that we use internet provided weather reports to tell us what the UV indexes are. Mm-hmm. And then the sunscreen manufacturers has a campaign that is triggered when there's like a UV warning. So at that point, then the player, and when ours is essentially a web renderer as well, it will render the flash, it will pull the information from the internet, and then it will create that particular spot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not all about advertising. It's not all about audience measurement. Sometimes the additional data, like post-sales data, mm-hmm. are pretty convincing. And that campaign was it was considered successful mm-hmm. because it was able to drive additional sales because of the relevance of the weather.
I think we've had some sort of a conference. Break up, and they're all kind of walking down the hallway here, chattering up a storm. Let's talk about the company. It's based in Taiwan. Is it privately held?
Yes. And again, historically, it was founded by Qi Ling, and about 5 years ago, we are invested by Intel Capital in the Series A. So
that was 5 years ago?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm sorry. That was about three to 4 years ago. The okay. exact time wasn't quite sure. But at that time, we became independent from Qi Ling. The company is held by private groups. And then we had Series A investment by Intel Capital.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How many people in the company?
We have 70 people in our company.
And you're not just a media company. You were telling me beforehand that you're kind of a vertically integrated company. You're in many respects, you're a solutions provider. You do a range of services.
Yeah. The shortest way I can think of is like we are a media development service. So we we were approached by venue saying that there is a desire or opportunity to develop the space into a media / retail space. Mm-hmm. And then we will look at it, we will assess how it could be built, and then we will help them build it and help them operate it. And that's within Taiwan.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. When you're putting something in a 7-Eleven or a Family Mart or one of these other ones where they approach you, who's paying to put that stuff in?
There are venues who will buy their own equipment.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so can explicitly say which one is which. They're all different,
sure.
But we do try to convince them that we want them to own the hardware. That's our model. Our mm-hmm. choice is that we want to be a software company. Mm-hmm. And the assets are to be carried by the venues who own the assets. At the end of these screens, somebody has to take care of it, so it's best that they own the assets.
Okay.
And because of that, there are different models. People who contribute most, certainly somebody has to contribute land, somebody has to contribute hardware, somebody has to contribute advertisement and service resources. What you contribute means what you share back in terms of the benefit. So mm-hmm. and some do choose to invest so they can retain more airtime and they can retain greater revenue share for the media income.
Mm-hmm.
And we structure individually to their need. Different companies have different priority in terms of what they need. Some wants media money, some just wants a box that will play corporate information but offset by media, and some just wants free boxes, and then they would say, okay, you can sell whatever media airtime you want, I just want my airtime. And there are different models.
And how do you convince them to make the investment? What's the ROI model?
Well, I mean, we do have successful cases in Taiwan, so that helps to us, to our advantage. We've been doing this, and we can say that we can start small. Basically, internationally, we try to create this ecosystem so local partners can take over and have it ongoing. And when we go into a new international opportunity, we'll say that let's deploy small. Let's do a proof of concept. Let's start with one store. Let's just make sure that the pipes are working. And then we go into 10 stores. It's like, give us 10 stores. We were trying to iron out all the problems that you can see within 10 physical stores. And that's a lot of problem. That's the hardest part, actually. That's a lot of problem that can be overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Once we go through that, then we say, okay, let's do 100 store. This become test marketing, because there's sufficient scale to start selling advertisement when you are in, within 100 stores.
Mm-hmm.
And then that becomes very clear ROI, because at that time, you know exactly how much it costs, you know exactly how many people comes in, and then you have a basic content infrastructure to scale up. So at that time, it will be easier for the stores to say, this is a worthwhile investment for me. It won't be from the air. It's not like, it works in Taiwan. How do I know it works for me overseas? Then we say, because we have audience measurement. Again, if you don't have audience measurement, you have to build it and you have to hope they will come.
Right.
But because we do have audience measurement, we can say that these are the numbers that they can expect. And when the numbers do grow, the buying interest will grow as well. So
okay.
That's how it works.
So last question. Where is Pilot TV going over the next, let's say, 12 months?
12 months, we're going to focus on delivering our international opportunities. In Taiwan, we're doing okay. We're doing quite well. Internationally, we are installing these proof of concept, 10 stores, 100 stores in different geographic locations. We need to iron out all those bugs in the pipeline. And once we do that, it's our job to prove the effectiveness of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's one of the things that a lot of other operators, they try to become the operator, they try to become the deployer, but most of the time, the venues or the customer ask them to become the proofer of mm-hmm. the signage effectiveness. So that's what we need to do. It's like we build them, now we need to quantifiably show that they are working, you know, to their benefits, and then the will to scale out and scale up is built in.
Right. All right. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed listening and learned something. If you want to stay on top of what's happening and actually matters in digital signage, join thousands of readers who visit 169, that's 16-9.net every day. If you like this podcast, please also check out the companion 169 podcast called Projects. That's done by Michael Tutton, and there's a new episode every second Friday. 169 the blog and now the podcasts are properties of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare bedroom in my house near Toronto. Thanks to our podcast sponsor, ScreenFeed, and thank you for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.